You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The Delphi case has taken so many twists, so many turns. It's hard to keep up if you're not watching it the way we are at an obsessive level where you wake up having nightmares about it. But one thing is clear, there are serious questions about how this case was handled from the start, between ignored confessions, missing evidence, and possible conflicts of interest. It seems more and more likely that the wrong man is behind bars, while key players in law enforcement and prosecution continue to dodge transparency. Joining me today, Eric Faddis, seasoned defense attorney. We're going to be talking about this case and exactly where it is all going, breaking down the latest legal bombshells. Eric is someone who's been on both sides of the courtroom. Let's start here. If prosecutors really did suppress evidence of another confession, and we're talking about the alleged confession in jail of Ron Logan to Richie Davis, how big of a deal is legality, and could this be enough to unravel Richard Allen's conviction?
It would be bigger than big, and it would absolutely be enough for an appellate court to review it and grant a new trial. The prosecution is always required to send to the defense not only incriminating evidence, but also evidence that tends to show the defendant is not guilty. That there was a case called Brady versus Maryland in I think the 60s that said if the prosecution does not do that, it is a tremendous violation and oftentimes results in a reversal.
The big thing that we hear the second that this gets brought up from the prosecution and from anybody who thinks that Richard Allen is guilty is he miserably failed and miserably underlined, because that's the term they always use in terms from the investigators about a lie detector that was allegedly conducted on Richie Davis. We don't have any date, time, who conducted it, anything about actually when it would have occurred, or anything about the questions asked. Just, he miserably failed. Move on. Nothing to see here is really kind of how it feels. And again, I mean, those things are not, you know, admissible in court to begin with. But that just seems to be where it was left off. I mean, is this a case of, again, just more blinders? We did look at him. We talked to him. He failed this, and we're just not going to hear him anymore. La, 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 la. What do you think is going on?
You know, I've seen several lie detector test examinations, and those things are not always as valid as you think. And there can be influence exerted by the examiner to have it go one way or the other. And so to use that as a basis to say, oh, yeah, so we didn't believe in it, we ignored it. And and we also didn't give defense all the information we had. I think that's terribly problematic for the government.
It does seem to be. The thing is, though, they're going to now have to prove, or the defense is going to have to prove, that these communications actually did take place. The allegation is that the inmate, Rishi, had sent 7 letters to McClellan, the prosecutor, back in 2017, like going all the way back. This wasn't he's on trial, let's try and get a bunch of attention right now. And in those letters, he had information that no one would have known at the time about the box cutter being used. He claims that Ron Allen sat there and literally confessed piece by piece about how this all went down, even making the allegation, and this is just the allegation, we're just reporting it, not saying this is true, that Ron Logan had said to him that, oh, you know, there's some sort of connection here, and I'm just paraphrasing, between the prosecutor and myself, and that he's not going to let me sit in here forever. It's a big claim to make that there's some sort of collusion going on there. And again, not saying that that is true by any stretch of the imagination, but again, big claim to make in a case like this.
Almost certainly. And look, if there were those letters sent by this inmate to the prosecutor, and those were not turned over to defense, they were put in a drawer, they were thrown away, some not put into the case, that is such an egregious violation of due process, of a defendant's right to a fair trial. And I just would be blown away. But being that it's a Delphi case, so much weird shit has happened, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that would basically, you know, ruin a career if you're found guilty of doing something like this. I have a hard time believing that Nick McClellan will be putting his you know, career and livelihood on the line for this, you know, for Ron Logan, or for Keegan Klein. I mean, it doesn't add up in my mind. The only way it adds up is if there's some reason that somebody's covering for somebody else. I'm not saying that's happening, but again, this thing just keeps looking more and more like something else is going on. Could this be, I'm just trying to exhaust the excuses of what may be brought here, because I'm going to think McClellan's going to have to answer this question. Is he not? Of what's going on?
I think he definitely is. And when we're talking about, you know, letters being mailed, or is there some kind of like trail, some sort of documentary trail that we can look at to say, hey, this letter came out of the jail on this date. It was addressed to the district attorney's office. I mean, that would be pretty significant information. So are there ways to kind of reconstruct or at least gather evidence as to whether these letters were actually sent? There are such ways. Now, it's going to be difficult that it happened in 2017 and a jail institution and everything else.
I mean, they do scan mail going out of a jail, correct? But then you'd also have to, I would think, I mean, again, I don't know, I'm not there. One would think you would have records of this. I would think you'd have to hold on to that for a certain amount of time. I don't know what the restrictions are. So I would imagine you'd have to go back there, see A, if these letters existed and if they went out of the system, correct?
I absolutely think so, and I know that some jail institutions in Colorado do that.
Now, that being said, we're talking about the same jail institution that was also, you know, accused of abusing him and locking him in a cage for more than a year and torturing him and all sorts of horrible things. I'd imagine if you don't want these things to be seen, they could go away. They could be not on record.
I would imagine so as well. And, you know, there have been cases where they have, lo and behold, found material evidence central to a case, like in a detective's drawer mm-hmm. or in places where they absolutely shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So are there ways to sort of make this stuff disappear? There are. I'm not saying the prosecutor did that, but I'm saying it's a question that should be asked.
Yeah, I'm not saying he did it either. I'm just, because there's so many things that have disappeared in this case, it's not like this is a crazy question to ask. Initially, you had hours and hours of interviews with people, persons of interest and such, not necessarily suspects at the time, but I think anybody was up at that moment to possibly be a suspect right after. So they're talking to people, and some of the very people we're talking about, they lost those tapes, or it was taped over, was their excuse. It was taped over on the DVR. It's gone. We don't have it anymore. And by the way, there was nothing on any of those tapes. Nothing to see here. Move along. Don't question us anymore. La, 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 la. Literally what has happened. So it's not far out to say, okay, well, you're being big spotlight over here is on this kind of weird thing that doesn't look right. How can we really trust you to produce this, even if you have it, because it ain't gonna look good?
Yeah, Tony, there has been multiple instances of evidence mismanagement in this case. And, oh, surprise, surprise, it happened to only benefit the government. It's never evidence mismanagement that benefits the defense. And so there is kind of a pattern, a history of that happening in this specific case. And so is it reasonable to say, hey, where are these letters this inmate says he sent to the lead prosecutor on the matter about an alternative suspect confessing to the crimes?
Why would you not look at this to begin with? I guess that's my initial trying to wrap my mind around this, not even to where we are today, because we have to remember there was no Richard Allen at this point in the case. He was not being investigated. Richard Allen at this time was raising his hand, going, hey, how can I help? I was over there. No charges, not a person of interest. They didn't have a suspect at that moment in time. And the FBI is looking at this at the same time going, yeah, I think you got this guy over here. This Ron Logan guy looks rather suspicious. The girls are on his property. He made up an alibi before the girls were even found dead. His phone puts him there. They raided his house. We have no idea what they found on the raid because they got kicked out of the investigation by Delphi. So there's a lot of things there. And McClelland, yet when questioned so many times, like, do you have a person of interest? Anyone, you know, at all, or once we did get years down the road to having Richard Allen, he's still saying, no, I'm not aware that there's anybody, not aware that anything at all. And you got the letters now, too, to add on top of everything, if they exist, if they're real, which I tend to believe they probably are real. That's a lot of things to ignore and to say that don't exist, that there's no leads here. Granted, yeah, it came from an inmate. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not viable or something to at least take a bit of a look at, other than saying you can only give us two paragraphs of what you want to say, which is what they did.
Oh, of course. And, you know, there are sometimes credibility issues with sometimes people are referred to them as jailhouse snitches. Those things happen. On the other hand, when people are in dire straits in a box in jail, sometimes they confide in folks. Sometimes you're looking for a connection. Sometimes you want to talk about what's going on in your life. You don't have anyone else to talk to. Mm-hmm. And so it's not unusual for people to make credible confessions in jail as well.
Well, and the fact that Rishi was not looking for anything out of this. He's said flat out, hey, I'm not looking to get my sentence reduced. I'm not looking for anything to do with me. I just want to give you this information. Not looking for a payday, nothing. Just here's what, and he's in jail on drug charges. So that also says to me a little bit more about the humanity of the person to a certain extent, as much as you can say about a drug dealer. But he's not a rapist. He's not a child killer. He's not a murderer. He's not a wife beater. He's not so many other things that deal more with interpersonal relationships and someone having the ability to harm another person directly like that. Yes, distributing drugs and meth is going to harm people. But there's a difference in terms of, I guess, how one would emotionally feel about that. That also stood out to me in terms of the type of person that he is. Not saying he's a great guy, but also he's not in there for abusing children or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and make no mistake, there is kind of a social stratification structure in prison. And there are folks who are more favorable and less favorable. The folks who, you know, have drug crimes and stuff like that for the reasons you mentioned are seen more favorably, as opposed to folks who are, you know, child rapists or something, who are not to be trusted and likely going to be assaulted. On top of that, the central criticism of a jailhouse informant is that they're saying something to get a benefit for themselves. According to some reports, this Richie Davis was not trying to do that. And so it just lends to the potential credibility of what he said.
He even offered to wear a wire. That to me is another, like, look, I'm not, you know, you don't have to just take my word for it on these letters. I will wear a wire. He's talking to me on a regular basis. I can probably get in there and get you some information. No need for that, Mr. Davis. We're good. We don't need that. Is that just ignorance? Is that just, well, he's an inmate, he's all full of lies. Lies, lies, lies. Or, I mean, what is it?
Yeah, it's it seems bizarre if a law enforcement officer is genuinely investigating a case, genuinely wants to get to the truth, and you have someone who claims to be a witness saying, hey, I have all this information for you, and on top of that, I will be your pawn. I will wear a wire to get this information to prove to you I'm telling the truth. It would seem very bizarre for a investigator with pure intentions to just ignore that and say, yeah, no, we're good. We kind of, no thanks. That just seems very peculiar.
I mean, it does, especially when you have no leads. And you already have all of the, and it's not like Ron Logan was just some random dude that I'm saying this guy out of the country did it. Like the FBI is already saying, this is probably your guy. they're doing a very thorough investigation on him. And then you have somebody inside saying, look, he's saying this shit to me. Like, we should, I don't know what it is, but you should probably take a look at it. And then later in years, we get all the way up to more recent dates in terms of the Richard Allen trial. Keegan Klein, another person that we've been talking about for quite some a while, he's in prison on charges of, you know, child pornography. Nothing to do with this case, with Abby and Libby, but the government had already been tracking him, and they had seen that he was trying to communicate with one of the girls, and even had plans to meet up with them on the date of the murders. Child predator. Communicating, tracked by the government. Look, this guy's trying to meet this girl. Just happens she dies that very same day. He's saying that Keegan Klein, Rishi is saying that Keegan Klein had something to do with this as well. It wasn't just Ron Logan who was out there. It was Keegan had some sort of something to do with it. This is his accusations against Keegan. Keegan's never been charged with anything in this. And again, it seems a little bizarre that they didn't even go after him. They never went after him on anything on this case. And everyone went after him for trying to lure a minor into some sort of situation. And they had the info. They had it right there. But they still said, let's let him be. It blows the mind, especially if you're just a responsible parent and you're going, holy shit, these are the people who are supposed to protect us. And they have the information on these predators. And they're just like, let's go after the CBS guy.
Here's the thing on that, Tony. Just the communications alone between Keegan and one of the minors trying to meet up, trying to lure this minor into some kind of scenario, that in and of itself is possibly criminal and could lead to charges against Keegan. A responsible investigator would look into that and say, hey, even if Keegan had nothing to do with the death, these communications were irresponsible and they might be unlawful. And we need to do a further investigation to that. As far as I can tell, based on the reports I've read, that was not looked into adequately, and Keegan was never charged with anything with respect to his contact with these minor girls, both of whom are one of them, and then both of them turn up dead.
Well, and we're also starting to see here, if these accusations are correct, of a bit of a ring forming. The allegation from Davis is that Ron Logan and Keegan Klein met up every once in a while, and Keegan had to help him with the cell phone because he didn't quite know how to download his kiddie porn correctly. So he had to basically help him with the technology of it all. Again, these are just the allegations that are coming out. Let's say these letters exist. Let's say that McClelland does have them. Is there any excuse that he can logically have other than I missed it?
There is no legal excuse that I can possibly think of. These would be textbook exculpatory materials in a case. Exculpatory meaning it tends to prove the innocence of a defendant. And that is a mandatory disclosure to defense. You cannot just keep these because, oh, they kind of hurt my case or really hurt my case. There is no justification I can think of for this prosecutor, if he did receive these letters, to not turn them over to defense. And I think his failure to do so, if that's what occurred, is a tremendous problem for the government in securing this conviction going forward.
I mean, what is going to happen here, in your opinion, if in fact these letters do exist? I mean, we are still kind of dealing with Gull over here. I mean, so that feels to me like anything could just be struck down no matter what they find. Where does this go if these letters exist?
You know, it's inches closer to something called structural error. So if this was just a failure to disclose exculpatory letters to defense, that would probably warrant a new trial and Richard Allen would have another bite at the apple there. But if it's so egregious, there's something called structural error where if the actions of the government are so egregious, so violative of the Constitution, so nefarious that it just impugns the integrity of all of the proceedings, sometimes the courts have found that the case should be dismissed outright. That is at least on the table if these letters exist, if the prosecutor got them and did not turn them over.
Do you think we're going to see the letters? Do you think they're going to see the light of day if they exist? Or are these, again, kind of lost in the wind?
You know, it's been the better part of a decade since they were allegedly transmitted. And we've already seen other important case materials that have gone by the wayside or recorded over, what have you. I think there is a very low chance that these will ever be discovered if they exist.
Let me ask you this, because even if they are gone and lost to time, obviously Ron Logan is dead, and so nobody can go in and question him anymore. Keegan Klein is still very much alive. And you still very much have the same guy who wrote the letters very much alive, who could still basically testify to the same things. You just have less people that you can investigate. Does that change anything? Does that change how they can look into this? Like, here, I'll just write the letters again. Here's exactly what I said all those years ago. You missed your opportunity back then, but here's what was said.
You know, it's hard to have faith that the government would, with pure intentions, look into this in a diligent and thoughtful manner. But defense can do their own investigation. There are outstanding private investigators out there. They could go interview Keegan. They could interview Ricci. They could get videotapes of those interviews. They could submit that as part of their appeal. And so there are still viable avenues to uncover what defense believes to be the truth, but they probably don't involve the government.
Is there anything here? Because this all just seems just so egregious. And, you know, I read some of our comments here and there, and people are screaming, and I don't even know if this is a possibility, so you tell me. Can a higher avenue of government get involved here? Can the FBI get back involved here? Can somebody get back involved here? Because clearly it's not working well on the inside on the local authority level. I know they were able to kick them out the first time, but these are getting into not just, you know, allegations, you know, of murder and the case itself. We're getting into allegations of government misconduct within, you know, just the structure of trying to try this case. When can that step in, or can that step in at any point?
Historically, the FBI has been empowered to investigate governmental organizations engaging in corruption and misconduct. And so the next steps would be for the defense to go to the FBI to conduct their investigation, obtain the materials they need, and say, hey, look, something really fishy is going on at this prosecutor's office or at the police department. We need a higher authority like federal folks to come in and do a proper investigation, because these folks are not going to investigate themselves.
And how does that happen? Like, is it just up to the FBI going, yeah, we got the time, we got the resources to do this? Is that a court order? Is that just them going, yeah, you got a pretty good case here. Look, this looks pretty off.
The vast majority of the time, it is discretionary on behalf of the FBI. So they can kind of pick and choose. Hey, I think this is important. I don't think that's important. And it changes with certain priorities of heads of departments and even higher up in the executive branch. And so you have to have kind of the stars align for the FBI to do this, absent some sort of court order, which usually don't come about unless there's a pattern of misconduct at a police department over the course of years or something like that.
Are we approaching that line, you think, where someone's going to go, yeah, we got to take a look at this?
You know, if you would have asked me last year, I think it would have been more likely. There have been some changes since last year in terms of who is going to be at the head of these organizations, including the FBI and everything else. And do those folks have a genuine interest in
justice,
possibly overturning a conviction where two children died? I'm not sure the current folks in charge have that interest.
That's all I got. Just...
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have five new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.